and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Laurie Wilson. Laurie Wilson lives in Morgantown, West Virginia, where she works as a computer systems analyst. Her poetry has appeared in various journals, including Southern Poetry Review, Poet Lore, the Comstock Review, and 5AM. Her first book, House Where a Woman, was recently released by Autumn House Press. Hi, Laurie. How are you?
I'm well. Hi, Jan.
We're excited because this is your first book, and I want to say congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it was just released from Autumn House, and you're doing readings and selling it all over the place. So you're going to start with a poem from House Where a Woman, right?
Yes, I'm going to start at the beginning of House Where a Woman.
Okay.
Meanwhile, a motorcycle revs on Green Street. Listen, these birds sing the same chaos every evening, same as last summer. Backdrop, steel fans incessant whir. Nothing's in my pockets, nothing but lint. It's 7:23, and I should cook up that kale. But Jesus, it's hot. I'm waiting for something to urge me off this bed. Zazen's a good answer if you don't care how the story ends. I miss my earring, the Zuni bear Andrea gave me, the one I found under this bed, then lost again. My belly jiggles, there's a fungus on my right big toe, but my new bra is blue and has lace. Look, this is my house. What I mean is, I'm queen. This comforter's tearing where the strips of cloth meet. Green, striped, tan, repeat. January, Wilson Avenue. Yesterday, the gas bill came. Last night, I put up storm windows. Three, if I count the bathroom, where the glass doesn't fit and only leans against the frame. I'm mending a pair of pants. And since I'm just sitting and sewing, I call my neighbor, who tells me, as if I didn't know, that he's hibernating. He says the cold makes him want to hunker down until he feels like a piece of dust. He laughs, says, I'm just babbling. I say, I like your babbling. He snorts, get a life, laughs again and loud. I say, I've got a life, thank you. He says, I haven't had a laugh like that in weeks. Drought. Nothing settles. Nothing grows hot. In the rotting and steaming, so little gets in. Even the hills, four shades of misted blue, lie trapped in the distance, unable to land. I've wiped these plates 1,000 times, green check towel circles again and again. Empty bowls scare me. I'm also afraid of clean swept corners, cold grip on the tongue. I told a man under the bridge I have ideas I can't express. He said, you don't have them. Wind hurries the clouds, takes this kitchen in and out of shade and heat by rapid turns, pushes the curtain away from the window, sucks it back. Two black flies' shadow, wings blurred on the screen. Outside, no leaf wilts, and the ground doesn't crack. Blackberries bend canes back to earth. Tomatoes already weigh down their vines. Daylilies croon to me, come, but a thick snake hangs from the cherry tree and doesn't sleep. This night's cave. Some nights, I lie awake staring into promises made in a house on Claridge Drive, before I grew up, before I had a son. I could pretend they weren't burns, circles raw on his arms, but say they weren't burns. There's still the broken door, still the empty white bottle. Look, you should get this by now. I couldn't keep him safe. The little boy, his face buried in the black dog's fur. And I'm his mother, so don't tell me I did my best. Don't excuse me. Please. What I know can obliterate hope with a sweep of one weak arm. I can't go back. What I want is the moon rising orange at the end of Wilson Ave, bigger than my neighbor's house. I want to be slapped. See that guy in front of Jean's, sliding from his bike. With two hands, he lifts his helmet, smooths his beard. The phoenix spread across his back beckons, and I am flying up Route 7, 75 miles an hour, and I will not blink or cry. Today, I lay in frozen grass. I heard each breaking blade, and when the snow came down, I couldn't tell which was darker, sky or shadows falling.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Laurie Wilson. She's reading from her new book entitled House Where a Woman, which was just published by Autumn House Press. We want to make sure we thank Michael Sims tonight, executive director of Autumn House Press, press housed in Pittsburgh, but really Autumn House has expanded so much, they're publishing books from all over the country, so it's a great service he's doing for writers and readers. So, Laurie, I wanted to ask you about sort of a love story I was feeling, that the voice in this in your poems is almost expressing a love for the flaws of the world. You know, it seems like, you know, there's in almost every poem, there's some kind of brokenness, you know, whether it's, you know, not necessarily a big brokenness, but maybe it's, you know, in the first poem you read, the fungus on the big toe, or the something about the house falling apart. But there's always something noticed that's not quite working, or, you know, out of the ordinary. Well, not really out of the ordinary. It's something that's very ordinary and human, but is noticed. And do you think of your work at all that way, as a love poem for the flaws of the world?
I never thought of it as a love poem before, but I think it's definitely true that in my writing there's a sense of wanting to validate that part of our lives. It's a big part of my life, of lives of other people I see, and it's easy to demean your life because it's full of broken things, and by the time you demean it for those, it's sometimes not a lot left.
Right, and yet it seems like it's a really common experience. I mean, that we all have many things that aren't quite working here, from small to large, but there's also something in there to me that's sort of, I don't know if this is the right word, but this seduction of the everyday, how the voice in your poems sort of pulls us in with this recognition of, oh yeah, I know that, I know about that, and that's, you know, that's happened to me, or, you know, my life isn't perfect either, and so it brings us in a really comforting way. And I don't know if, you know, is that something you were trying to do in your work, or are these poems that just evolve and come out without that kind of forethought?
I don't think it's something that I consciously did in a way of how will this affect my reader. But I am aware that my poems have that effect on people. I mean, I think it comes more fundamentally out of me and my experience and my own wish to not be totally frustrated. And you know, but I also think things that are broken are interesting. Those details are part of being human, I guess.
Right. I mean, we've all read those poems that seem to be one-dimensional about how, about the perfect flower, the perfect tree, blah, blah, you know. And they don't seem to have that dimension of humanity that your work has, or, you know, work that includes, you know, more of a range of experience. Don't you think?
I'm trying to think of a perfect poem, but yeah, I always think not of poems, but of perfect people that annoy me. But
so. Yeah, and we know that, you know, behind closed doors, that's not the case, right?
Yes, I hope so.
But anyway, so could you read more poems?
Yes, I sure could. My mother likes to tell how when I was 10, she sent me to fetch a sweater from the top right drawer of her dresser. How when I came back, I said, the drawer was stuck, but I looked in the other 8 drawers. She thinks this is funny. I think it's the distance between a world where anything not in its place simply isn't, and mine, where things are always showing up where they don't belong. The way yesterday in the checkout line, I saw the white hem of the clerk's undershirt hanging untucked and wrinkled, and you were suddenly there at the edge of the bed, shoulders hunched forward, long arms reaching back to peel the shirt over your head. In 1990, we moved to the woods. It wasn't noise exactly, though I'm sure the kids were noisy, weren't they? It was busyness, talk. No, it was something I was trying to keep out of my head, like the music, Neil Young, Dire Straits, also Ravel, Rimsky-Korsakov, Mozart. It was making up reasons, the scramble for something clever to say, as if silence was a fault and my own a failure to pull my own weight. I said yes. I said yes when I wanted to say no. When I couldn't say yes anymore, I said nothing. We lived in the woods, and nowhere in my life was there quiet, except for the silence I carried, silence pressing back all those years, saving space I could not imagine for what. Even now, my hands, palms forward, stop. If a woman makes, finally, a fist, if it comes to this, if silence is hoarding, say I was greedy. I'll just say about this next poem that it borrows a form of repetition from Olena Clidiac Davis, and I think the repetition is interesting for how it reflects what the poem itself is trying to do. I sat on the rock with my sleeves rolled up. He may be lying. He may not. It's like trying to crack this rock with my hand. What difference does the poplar tree make? I sat on the rock with my sleeves rolled up, a swallowtail dragging a ragged wing, as if I didn't have a house to go home to, a gray and white house painted last summer. As if something this solid should answer, as if this stone ground smooth should be the solution. He kept saying he loved me, but that she understood a room wants a window on at least 2 walls. He may be lying. He may not. It's like trying to crack this rock with my hand. I sat on the rock with my sleeves rolled up. What difference does the poplar tree make? As if I didn't have a house, a swallowtail dragging, a gray and white house painted last summer. He kept saying he loved me, but that she understood. As if this stone ground smooth. He may be lying. It's like cracking a gray and white house. What difference can a ragged tree make? He kept saying that she understood about the room and the window on at least two walls. I sat on the rock with my sleeves rolled up. Clouds kept moving. How could I keep track of the wing? The next poem that I'm going to read is the title poem of the book, House Where a Woman. When I was six, I cried for my father to get down on the floor and check for coils or flickering tongues. I saw him bring the shovel blade down between the lilacs. I've spent weeks finding courage to ride a bike, practicing twisting shoes from the pedals, learning to steer skinny tires in the wind. When it seems it wasn't the bike I was afraid of at all, but the black snake reaching from beneath the wild geranium out onto asphalt. I sit here every evening with my dinner and glass of wine, so I must have seen the way slanting sun barely clears the window's edge, laying a bright arrow of light across the table scars right up over my plate. I must have noticed the cardinal calling against a still sky, the street so quiet, though all day cars sped up and down between Overdale and Green. Where is the well for drawing bucket after bucket of what it takes to sit up in bed? No, just to pull the blankets from my face. Somewhere there must be a memory of sliding light. In the yellow house across the street, the window blinds come down, an opening door, a laugh, a beat of rock and roll. Look here, my own house, window and table. All you birds and windows, swinging doors, Cadillac parked on the broken street, fork and painted plate, look. This is my small house, house where a woman lives.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Laurie Wilson. She's reading from her new book, House Where a Woman, recently published by Autumn House Press. And I love that voice that keeps coming back, look, this is my house. That's great. And it comes up in a couple poems, like, look, I'm trying to tell you something. How did that emerge in your poems? I mean, it's such a great thing. Do you remember how that happened? Or
I think that first showed up in that title poem. And that poem was influenced by Jane Mead. And she does that in a similar poem in one of her books, The Lord and the General Din of the World. But I think it impressed itself upon me. There was just something more insistent that, I guess, a voice that was more insistent that wanted to be heard in these poems. And I think it actually, you know, the poems are written over the course of 10 years, but I think it's really been in the last few years that that voice has become more and more a part of the poems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of this poems being written over 10 years, for our listeners out there, maybe some writers who are just beginning or maybe who aren't getting the immediate success they want, can you talk about that 10-year process at all? What it was like for you?
I guess I didn't think about it as a 10-year process as it was happening. When I started writing, I didn't ever envision a book. I didn't ever envision sending a poem out. I don't even think I knew such a venue existed. So part of the process for me was probably helped by only learning about these things gradually, so I didn't have to feel any sense of failure earlier than necessary. But one thing that was interesting to me when with writing over a long period of time, there's quite a change in how the poems move from the beginning to the end. Well, I think in quality, but also just in terms of what they're about. So that was a question for me, whether I would be able to have a book out of that huge a variety. But that did seem to come together in the last few years. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a great thing about your book is there is a range of voice and style. I really like your crisp language and precision of detail and how it moves towards the moments of poignancy in your work. Would you say that this attention to detail in your writing is a driving force for you or a place that grounds you in your work?
Yes, and I think it's reflective of how a lot of my poems are created, because I would say I think I have a lot of processes, but one that is behind most of the poems is note-taking, observations of things, and it's going back through those and seeing how one observation fits with another observation that a poem is made. But those detailed observations are the beginning mm-hmm. of it.
Oh, okay. Well, where do you take these notes? Like all over the world when you're walking around, or?
Yeah, I don't have a notebook when I'm talking to my friends or anything obsessive. But mm-hmm. But yeah, I have a small books that I keep in my backpack all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you read some more poems?
Yes. My mother's white fist. I was 9 and still awake. I couldn't see the moon, but watched tree shadows slide across my bed like my mother's hands smoothing sheets. Then headlights, my father, home late again. He'd been gone all day, gone before the goat dropped her striped and slippery kids. I heard the screen door catch, heard my mother tell him how I wouldn't go to sleep. It had been a long day. She couldn't milk without a milking stand, couldn't fill the bottles. The kids were sucking at the teats. He stopped her, said, okay, okay. He'd build the milking stand right then, and came and got me out of bed. The two of us would do it as a team. We dragged the boards and sawed off stumps and laid them in a hay. He said we'd do this for my mother, for being gone all day into night, though I'd never left. She stood by the cherry tree and watched him work, her whole face tight with words she didn't say. So my father let out his breath and said, what's wrong? And still no answer. He said, please go inside. And finally, she spit from her mouth like bugs. It's a very suitable milking stand. She didn't go inside. She didn't move. She waited like a dare. She wanted to hate it. She wanted him to make a mistake. She wanted a reason for the knot of anger rising, something that wasn't her fault. I sat in the hay outside the pen. I watched him pick her up and carry her around the pen, past the daffodils, while she cried and hit him with her fists. He set her down on the stump I used to reach the rope swing. And when she ran inside the house, he unhooked the car battery so she couldn't drive away. He said we had to keep her safe. I was 9. And the moon broke through the clouds above the cherry tree like my mother's white fist. Stripping paint from the trim of an upstairs window. The night after Uncle Perry died, Aunt Mabel's heart stopped in her sleep. Dad tied her rocker to the Plymouth roof, drove it 2,200 miles east to home, sanded, stained, and polished it, set it rocking in front of the hearth. Scraping blue paint from the window trim, I think of my father's square hands. I'm wearing your red flannel shirt, which no longer smells of you, nor did I think of you when I pulled it from the hanger. Though when I threaded my hand through the hole in the elbow, I thought I heard your laugh. I scrambled eggs with onion and mushroom, spooned it onto the old china, and carried it up here to eat. I am trying to love this still indeterminate wood. Imagine its liberated sheen. But soaked in stripping chemical, the wood looks ugly, rotten. The paint lets go unevenly. It clings to the grain. How is it possible to lift every trace? This next poem, Potomac River, South Fork, takes place, I guess you could say, in West Virginia. So in West Virginia is quite a wrinkled, West Virginia is quite a wrinkled land. So when you're sitting next to a river, there can be, for all intents and purposes, a mountain at your back. Potomac River, South Fork. Bull bellows. Shale falls apart in my hand. I am outside, on the outside, out. Here on this side of the river, quiet, no talking, only my crowded head rattling noisy. Oak on the water breaks over and over, kingfisher low, black cows running. Shut out or staying away or refusing to enter, or this faded shirt or this wary face. What would it be to trust my body? I mean, this body, hiding, hidden, as if I could keep myself safe. Whole trees, snarl of roots, have washed down this river.
We have time for one more short one, I think.
Okay. Years. You don't know what it means to be trapped. Feather to stone. I don't exaggerate. What good to me are these puny hands? When did the cricket stop singing? Already evenings she burns the winter wood. Sumac, asters, the indigo bunting is gone, another V of geese honking over the pond. One night, a duck fell out of those trees, hit the ground outside the kitchen window, a duck hurrying down the dark path, graceless bursts of flight, more like hopping. How many years ago was that? She sang to herself. Where thy gentle wing abides, the rest without words. She remembered Beethoven more than Schiller. She believed in music, not God, and set about pruning the pear trees, forsythia, butterfly bush. When she lay the shears down, she flexed her hands, sucked the skin between fingers and thumb.
The poetry of Laurie Wilson, reading from her new book, House Where a Woman. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jan.
It was fun. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.